o'clock.
And breaking news now
on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Steve Knight. Now that the manhunt in the mountains near Big Bear Lake, California is over...
Relief! Now we can have our town back.
Authorities have revealed new details about the desperate end of fugitive ex-cop Christopher Dorner's life.
Authorities say they've recovered 10 silencers and a number of high-powered rifles and weapons, including one rifle that they say Dorner used to shoot people that says vengeance on the side. In the meantime, authorities also say that Dorner, they believe, shot himself in the basement.
The wound that took Christopher Dorner's life was self-inflicted.
Meantime, at the side of the cabin, which is now just a pile of rubble, the owners say it's easy to rebuild, but their thoughts are with the four victims senselessly killed by Christopher Dorner. In Seven Oaks, California, Adam Housley, Fox News Radio.
President Barack Obama was back home in Chicago yesterday promoting his proposals that he laid out in his State of the Union address.
Last year, there were 443 murders with a firearm on the streets of this city. And 65 of those victims were 18 and under. So that's the equivalent of a new town every 4 months.
The first lawsuit has now been filed against Carnival Cruise Lines for that dream voyage to Mexico that turned into a nightmare. As for the disabled Triumph,
the ship was towed away to a nearby shipyard on Mobile Bay where it will undergo some repairs. It'll also get a thorough cleaning, and also the NTSB continues to investigate the cause of that engine room fire that brought about the loss of power on the high seas. Carnival officials say the Triumph will remain out of service through April.
Fox's Jonathan Serry. A small army of laborers is at work at a Russian city in the Ural Mountains. They're replacing windows in 4,000 buildings that were blown out by that meteor that crashed to Earth yesterday. The shattered glass injured about 1,000 people. You're listening to Fox News Radio. Fair and balanced.
There's more to Fox News Radio than meets the ear. Go behind the headlines and join the conversation on the hottest stories of the day on the Fox News Radio Facebook page. Be a part of the Fox News Radio Facebook fan community. Post comments and tell us your opinions. See behind-the-scenes photos and videos and post your reactions to the stories that matter to you. Click the like button on Facebook and connect with breaking news and features like Fox in the Fast Lane, House Call for Help, and more. Go to Facebook.com/Fox News Radio.
Weeknights, we're busting out a brand new lineup. First, market fraud, government abuse, corruption. At 5, nothing's off limits on money with Melissa Francis. Then, from bloated bank fees to consumer scams. At 6, Jerry's exposing the issues impacting your wallet. Plus, get smart market insight and trusted analysis you won't find anywhere else. At 7, Lou Dobbs is all business. And the first and last name in business, Cavuto. Shedding light on the biggest stories making headlines at 8. Only on the Fox Business Network, giving you the power to prosper.
There are accusations of insider trading in a big business deal that was done this week.
Heinz announced this week it was being sold for $23 billion to Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway and a company in Brazil. But something didn't sit right with the government. The Securities and Exchange Commission is suing unknown investors for scoring a huge illegal profit using advanced knowledge of the sale. They've been traced to Swiss bank accounts, which have been frozen under an emergency order. Heinz and Berkshire Hathaway weren't available to comment, just not talking about it, the Brazilian company 3G, which had similar questions raised in 2010 when it bought Burger King. In New York, Ron Flatter, Fox News Radio.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell was paid almost $30 million in 2011. His base salary was about $3 million, but according to the league's tax return, NFL owners gave Goodell a $22 million bonus. Next season will be the Minnesota Vikings last in the 31-year-old Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. The team is getting a new stadium.
It's going to be the largest construction project that this state has ever undertaken.
That's Michelle Kelm-Helgen, chairwoman of the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority. The Vikings will play two seasons outdoors at the University of Minnesota's TCF Bank Stadium until the new stadium is finished. A country star's stature rises even farther.
You be my honeysuckle.
It took him a couple years, but Blake Shelton now has a platinum album. 2011's Red River Blue has been certified platinum by the RIAA for shipments of 1 million copies. In other country news, Lady Antebellum's Need You Now has surpassed 6 million downloads, while Taylor Swift's I Knew You Were Trouble has reached triple platinum. Sabrina Sabah, Fox News Radio.
Rabbits at the Denver airport are eating the wiring on vehicles parked there. A local TV station says one solution is to coat the wiring with fox or coyote urine, which can be purchased at hunting shops. I'm Steve Knight, Fox News Radio.
If you're out and about here on our Saturday morning in Baltimore, be aware that you could run across some slick spots on the roads, especially bridges, overpasses, untreated surfaces. We've got some snow flurries and a couple of snow showers happening. Temperatures today are going to hold pretty steady in the mid to upper 30s. We'll see some more snow showers this evening, but not a lot of accumulation, if any. We turn partly cloudy late night, the low 24. Sunshine tomorrow morning, but some flurries for the afternoon, the high 35. I'm Jason Beck from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I had PTSD. Once I was back from Iraq, I was distant from everybody in my family.
We had a reunion of our unit, and you'd hear these spouses say, "Is your husband doing that? My husband's doing that too. I thought it was just us." And really understanding that, hey, this is a common experience.
I learned more to listen to what he was saying, and that made it easier for me to understand where his pain was coming from.
Warriors should know that resources are available. Learn more at realwarriors.net.
Set your alarm clock to AM 680 WCBM.
Tune your first car radio button to AM 680.
Listen at work on WCBM.com.
Listen all day and all night
to Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
The views and opinions you hear on Talk Radio 680 WCBM and WCBM.com are not necessarily those of the owners, management, employees, and advertisers of WCBM. But they should be.
The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Alan Ellis here for the Outdoorsman Radio Show, where we talk about fishing, hunting, and the great outdoors, and that's what we want to talk about with you today. No special guest. We can talk a little bit about the General Assembly, if you like. We've been spending a lot of time on guns, and I'd really like to talk about fishing, if you would. So you guys can start it, whatever you want to talk about. You want to talk about upcoming fishing? I know there have been guys out applying for perch and trout that have been stocked on the Eastern Shore and elsewhere. Trout stocking has begun. And I just want to know how your fishing season's kicking off, if you've been yet, if you've even gotten your license. There's some stuff that's going on right now we can share with you about flounder. Establishing the flounder season's coming up. They're looking for public input on that. We've got a lot of things happening in the General Assembly, fishing and hunting bills, and I haven't concentrated a lot on them. The new Maryland Hunting Quarterly came out this week late due to a problem at the printing company, and so we've been trying to get that out into the hands of the dealers and into your hands as well, and been traveling all over. Spend a lot of time on the road. So, trying to stay in touch, keep in touch. I had a phone call last night from our friend Patrick Shomo, who's president of the Maryland Shall Issue, on what's going on in the General Assembly with the governor's gun bill, the Senate Bill 281. And yesterday, a very big surprise from Mike Miller, president of the Senate, who announced that he would have the Senate full Senate vote coming this week on the governor's gun bill. So the forces have been mobilized, and what that means is that very soon, over the weekend and Monday and Tuesday, if you are concerned about Senate Bill 281, you need to contact your senator in your district. There are some key senators on key panels that need to be contacted. I was supposed to receive an email from the president, and unfortunately, I guess due to his busy schedule, he was unable to get that to us. So I'll just generally make you aware that that you need to contact your senator in your district. Not very long. Just say, dear Senator, so-and-so, email, phone call. That's gonna help. But the when it gets to this time of year, the members of the General Assembly, they don't even read your emails. But the subject line is very important. Don't say to them, we believe you don't support such and such. You know, we believe you don't. I believe you don't support the Second Amendment right. Don't try to define what the official lawmaker does or says. Define your position. Dear Senator so and so, I'm in your district. I support the Second Amendment and oppose Senate Bill 281. I have read the bill. You should oppose it. Or, you know, you won't get my vote next time, or however you want to do that. But short and sweet, they count pros and cons. They don't necessarily read the content of your bill. So, of your email message. Emails, phone calls are more important. Phone calls directly to their office, even if you don't get to speak to the senator, which you won't. But you need to say, I'm in your district, and I oppose this measure, or I support this measure. So on the headlines right now, Senate Bill 281, which is the Firearms Safety Act, or whatever the stupid title is of that thing, it's basically the gun ban bill. So this is the time. Today, tomorrow, and Monday is the time to do that. Even if you get a recorded message, tell them where you're from, tell them what district you live in, and contact your senator's office. The outpouring of support last week at the gun rally was incredible and scared the heck out of them. On the 6th. So they got the message that day. They need to continue to get the message that we are still serious about protecting our Second Amendment rights. So there you go. Let's see. 410 WCBM 680. 410-922-6680 is our phone number here. If you'd like to call and weigh in, we'd love to hear from you on whatever's going on in your world. It's a little chilly day out there, kind of rainy. I'm not sure if it's rain or snow or mix or whatever, but not very much of it. However, and that's just here, so I don't know what it's doing in your area. Look out the door, but I will caution you that you can. It's pretty slick out there. The temperature's right borderline on freezing, and potential for ice is there. The Department of Natural Resources Fishery Service intends to propose regulations in 2013 that expands the recreational summer flounder fishery. The Maryland harvest estimates in 2012 were significantly lower than the target that is set for Maryland in 2013, and can expect the fishery expand the fishery. Options that are currently being proposed to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission Summer Flounder, Black Sea Bass, and SCUP Technical Committee all include expansion of the fishery through decreased minimum sizes, expanded seasons, increased creel limits, or a combination of those management measures. The ASMFC, Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, try to say those five letters real fast. Management Board meets this coming week, February 18th, to approve or deny the options. The public comment period will close at 4 p.m. on March 29th, If you'd like to submit a written comment, you can click on this link. And if you would like to see this link, it's on the Department of Natural Resources website. Or if you just call me, or email me, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, I'll be more than glad to provide this for you. But the 2013 options go like this. The estimate of the summer flounder harvest was only 20,700 fish, and it's I guess the percentage was 34% or 34.9% of the allocation. So the options are like this. Option one, keep it at 17 inches, April 14th through December 16th. The creel limit of 3, and that does not liberalize anything. The option two is to keep the size limit at 17 inches and run the season from January 1 to December 31 with a creel limit of 3. The option number three is to lower the size limit to 16. Run the season all year to January 1 to December 31 with a creel limit of 3 flounder, and that would liberalize the percentage of 105%. Option number 4, 16 and 4. 16 inches of summer flounder, no closed season, and a creel limit of 4. Now, they've color-coded these four options, green, yellow, pink, and red. The color code indicates how comfortable they are with the exact estimate percentage liberalization, not the option. All options presented are expected to be within the allowable liberalization. So what they're saying to you is they're the least comfortable with the most generous option, and that's four, option four, 16-inch size limit, four fish is the creel limit. They're a little less favorable with the three fish per creel limit. They are very happy with leaving it where it is, and they're saying we're okay with 17 inches and 3 opening the season year round. So I don't know. Do you fish for flounder year round? I guess you could. I don't know if they're here, but you could certainly try. Oh, I just lost that. There's something else I wanted to say on that. It's not giving it to me. Why not? Oh, summer flounder, what to expect for 2013. Maryland summer flounder target is 73,852 fish. Not 851, not 853. 72,852. That's the target. Not one over, not one under. We're pointed right to that number. Last year we caught 20,700. Now that's an estimate. It could have been 20,697. It could have been 20,704. But best guess, 20,700. But we have a target of 73,852. The current options approved by the Summer Flounder Technical Committee include a combination of longer season, smaller fish, and higher creel limits. Options still need final approval by the board, so there could be minor changes. So anyway, if you'd like to weigh in on flounder, if you're a Ocean City avid flounder fisherman, or if you're listening in Ocean City and you'd like to weigh in on this, that is available on the Department of Natural Resources website. So, there you go. 410 WCBM 680, 410-922-6680. Don't leave me hanging here, folks. Don't leave me hanging. I want to hear from you. Let me go back and... All right. Need to take a break already? All right, we can take a break. Let's tell folks about the Maryland Fishing Challenge. Why don't we? Talk about fishing today. Yellow perch right around the corner. Trout season's in and out wherever, depending on the release and catch and release areas or the schedule, the stocking schedule, I guess is what I'm trying to say. There are some people going offshore on good days. So, you know, you got pickerel, you got bass fishing. But anyway, it is time for the Maryland Fishing Challenge. You could win great prizes like the grand prize, boat motor and trailer rig from Bass Pro Shops, or thousands in tackle from Bill's Outdoor Center. Well, prizes from sponsors like the World Fishing Network and Under Armour, too. From now through Labor Day, all you have to do is go fishing. Yeah. If you're lucky enough to catch a Maryland Citation-sized fish or crab and certify your catch, you're in the contest. It's that easy. There are more than 60 species of fish in freshwater in the tidal rivers in the Chesapeake Bay and on the Atlantic coast to qualify. You could join folks like Joshua Fielder of Baltimore. He caught both a 24 and a quarter inch tautog and a 25 and a half inch tautog off Ocean City. I mean, those are big old tautog. Yep, good eating too. Richard Krantz of Frederick caught a 21 inch smallmouth in the Potomac River. They're all the newest inductees in the Maryland Fishing Challenge. So stop by your local Fishing Citation Center, check the fishing rule book, or visit the DNR website at www.dnr.maryland.gov for all the details in the 2013 Maryland Fishing Challenge and the Citation Fish Program. Again, that's www.dnr.maryland.gov. Are you feeling lucky?
This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Next week on Sean and Frank, join us for Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, Ted Nugent, former Ambassador John Bolton, author John Lott. Weekdays 6 to 9 on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
But now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade, sitting in the shade. Whether it's hot.
Good morning, Guy. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Alan. Great show.
What's up?
What's the outlook for the spot population this year? Well, spot croakers, whatever you want to call them. And is there any?
Well, that's two different species.
Well, okay, spot, what I usually use for bait for catching fish.
Yeah. All right. Do you catch your own?
Yes.
Okay, so you go out, take your boat out?
No, I'm offshore.
Oh, offshore. Okay. All right, so you catch your own spot for bait.
Right.
That's a very good question, and we hope to have some fisheries folks on here very soon to answer questions like that. I haven't heard. Flat out, I haven't heard. I know that the spot population in the bay over the last couple of years has had highs and lows. The popularity of live lining and the abundance of pots out there have, you know, not helped.
From what I understand, is they're catching these spot for fish formula, and before they even get into the bay, is this true?
Well, I don't know what the commercial application for spot is, but I mean, L-Wive is what you might be talking about. Bunker, Menhaden, they catch those in huge nets. They process those at a big facility in Virginia for these fish oil capsules and things like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
So it's not spot. It's not croaker.
Okay. But I very rarely caught very many last year. I just don't understand it.
Yeah. Well, you know, they are sensitive to temperature. If it's too cold when they come into the bay, or if it gets cold while they're here, we've had dramatic fish losses among the spot population and some of the croaker population. But recently, they've had some. I don't hear as much excitement about the croaker fishing as I've heard, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So I don't know if it's a cyclical thing or if it's a die-off or what it might be. But, you know, the guy to ask is the guy that's out there listening right now who works for the Department of Natural Resources that can help us out with that. And so we'll try to get a number of folks in here from the fisheries this year to address those issues. Now, you know, I don't know if my buddy Dale from formerly of Easton, or formerly of Denton, now of Easton, is listening, but he may be up on that. I'm not sure if he follows that since he retired or not. So that's a question out there for guys like Dale and others who manage the Chesapeake Bay species. And you know, now, you know, that, like I said, the spot and the croaker are two different species. And then if you're talking about the harvest of menhaden, that's been reduced by the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission because of overfishing, because of the, you know, we're all health conscious and we want to take our fish oil capsules. Well, fish oil comes from somewhere. You got to squeeze it out of certain kinds of fish, and the menhaden is that fish, and that's
kind of like when they catch all these menhaden. I'm sure that's all they're catching. There's no spot in there at all.
Oh, there could be. I mean, how do you know? It's a big school of fish.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the bycatch is. So, but I'm sorry I wasn't able to help you on that one, but we'll get an answer for you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Oop, thank you. So the first question is a difficult one. Thanks, Brian, I appreciate that. Bob and Dundalk, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Alan. I'm doing all right. Alan, I have kind of a serious question. I don't know if you know the answer. Maybe the gentleman.
Neither do I. It's morning.
Good morning again. Well, let me get right to it. You know, as the waters are getting dirtier and dirtier each year, you think there might ever just be a day that where we're just fishing and just have to throw them back and not even be able to eat them? And plus the gentleman's question earlier about the spots and all that, how do we know this isn't attributed to the dirty water right now?
Yeah, well, I know the kill that killed a lot of spot a couple of years ago was attributed to cold weather. I can tell you that. But the dirty water is definitely a problem. There is no doubt. The Chesapeake Bay, despite the environmentalist efforts to say, you know, we need to preserve this and preserve that, it would take a massive, massive effort to clean up the Chesapeake Bay.
Right, I agree.
The infrastructure of the sewage treatment plants, the amount of people flushing the toilet every day that eventually winds up in the Chesapeake Bay, it's just been unabated. We don't know what's out there. I mean, you know, that's the reality. They can test all they want. They can, they can tell us you know, what's down there. But, if we don't have the oysters that we had in this Chesapeake Bay that would filter the water and, you know, get those impurities out of it, and we don't have them, even though we had a pretty good oyster crop this year. But we don't have the abundance that we used to have. If we don't have that, the water, you know, the tides can only flush out so much of the stuff. But where is it going to go? So, you know, you just pray and you just hope that, you know, we get a big flush like a storm every now and then.
And you're getting the sewer water in there.
Well, that's what I just said. The infrastructure of the sewage system in Maryland is aged, and you know, even particularly Baltimore, right there, where you have, for example, I read in the Frederick paper right after Sandy that there were 11 major sewage spills in Frederick County. Well, where does that go? What goes into the It goes into the Monocacy. It goes into Potomac. Where do those rivers flow? The Monocacy flows into Potomac. The Potomac flows into Chesapeake Bay. I mean, all that stuff eventually winds up in the bay somewhere. You know, it doesn't all wind up in the Baltimore Harbor. There are many, many river systems and creeks and watershed. You know, it all winds up in the Chesapeake Bay.
Well, you know, I heard something pretty interesting a few years ago. There was another country, I'm not going to mention where, but they were testing, you know, putting hay, like in straw and all that stuff in the water, and somehow it naturally did something where it was, you know, curing the water's problems.
Well, yeah. There's a method out there for taking care of algae growth in ponds, not in flowing water.
Oh.
Where you put bales of barley hay into the water, and it absorbs the algae and counteracts the algae, the effects of the algae, and that's what you might have read. That's the only thing I know that where they put hay or straw in it. But you know, we have other factors. There was front page news. I think what did I read yesterday? Was it the Washington Post about pharmaceuticals in the waters and causing perch in Norway or something to become more aggressive? These are, you know, antidepressants and things like that that people flush down the toilet and wind up in the waterways. You know, here we've had some studies done where they you know, were wondering what is changing the sex of fish, where, you know, the male fish turn into females. They're trying to figure out what causes that. They found out that one of the contributing factors was this stuff that you put on your hands to cleanse your hands, you know, where that gets washed into the water from the hospital systems and things like that. People put that, what's it called, Purecell or something on there.
Antibacterial
stuff. It all flows down through into the water system and affects the fish. There's such an abundance of it. So it's pretty interesting stuff.
Well, this problem, that's a big, giant shame. And despite all the efforts of these really nice people trying to clean the water up, it seems like it's never going to end. And you know, it's been going on for a long time.
Well, sure. And they also...
You know, it's just a big, giant shame for everybody who enjoys the water.
And they put the, you know, you can't swim in the bay anymore. I mean, I wouldn't.
No, you better
when
believe
I was
it.
A kid, come down here and, you know, 12, 13 years old in the mid-60s, come down here and stay with my aunt and uncle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, uncle had a boat. I'd go out and swim around the boat out in Chesapeake Bay.
And who knows what we were even swimming in back then?
Well, you know, I'm still fine, I think. So, but anyway, Bob,
well,
thanks.
I think you really got to the question as good as you could. And I appreciate you taking my call.
No problem, buddy.
Of course, I'm going to enjoy your show just like everybody else does every weekend.
All right, appreciate it, Bob. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan.
Yep, bye-bye. Let's go to Alice and then Ida.
Oh, good morning, Alan.
Hi.
I'm listening to all the memories of going back to the bay and stuff when you said in the 60s. Well, my grandfather passed away when I was about six in 1970. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, he used to really enjoy going fishing over in South River.
Sure.
He mostly caught eel, that I recall.
Yep.
But, you know, there's something very special about hunting and fishing with your grandpa, your uncles, or your dad. And
yep.
I think that people need to really think about what happens when you do that. It's more than just bonding. I mean, even if you have long silences, you know, while you're fishing, that you're doing something together. And,
yep.
And occasionally, the long silences are interrupted with beautiful pearls of wisdom. and teaching moments and experiences, and you just can't recreate that in other situations. And it's only really through hunting and fishing that I think that these experiences happen. Plus, not to mention, you're teaching vital skills that will, you know, help you in all kinds of different situations.
Well, so. I'll tell you, I was adopted, and
oh, were you?
Uh-huh, my dad was not a fisherman. He grew up in a family that was very work-oriented. He had 11 brothers and 4 sisters.
Wow.
And my interest is what sparked, let me put it this way. The interest of the people that worked for my dad, they encouraged him. The guys, I've told this story before. My dad was a nursing home superintendent. The guys that worked in the maintenance department there, the guys that cut the grass, the guys that, you know, fixed the plumbing and the electric in the building and that type of thing. You'd call them, what would you call them now? Facility managers. Mm-hmm. Those guys I remember one guy, Bill, he was a big pheasant hunter, and George, he was a big fisherman and owned his own boat. And they got my dad interested in fishing first.
Uh-huh.
And he went whole hog. He bought the boat, he bought the equipment, you know, he learned to fish. And that was only a year or two before he actually started taking me fishing. I started when I was 5.
So, oh, how fun.
So, you know, but those days where he would take the afternoon and we'd go down to the river and fish, you know, in the middle of the week sometime when we had the place to ourselves. Those memories, my interest in fishing, I think, drove him. Although he really enjoyed fishing, he liked getting out with the guys, you know, and going down to the river and fishing it overnight. He'd go to Canada for a week or something like that. And, you know, but along the way, he brought me along on a lot of those adventures. But I was just young, you know, and he brought me along on a lot of that. And we took vacations to southern New Jersey, and his boyhood friend was an avid fisherman who got him involved in bass fishing and fishing for, we fished for, you know, on Delaware Bay. And it was just a tremendous amount of memories now when I look back on that. As far as hunting is concerned, my interest in hunting got my dad interested in hunting. And he didn't care if he shot a deer or not, you know, but he was my biggest cheerleader. And I'm sure that, his character and his influence did a lot to bring me where I am today. So, yeah, I owe him quite a bit.
Well, that's great. So, and
my grandfather, uh-huh. He was a squirrel hunter.
Oh, wow.
And he never fished until he was retired, 40 years from the Pennsylvania Railroad. And he'd go out in a boat with us, and, you know, we'd fish, and he was never very successful, but he'd catch something every now and then. And he would have these silly stories that he'd tell and that type of thing. So, you know, I got to spend some time with him, too. So,
have you written these down? You
really? No, I haven't.
You need to do that, Alan.
Yeah, I know I do. Yep,
there's a book right there. and I'm thinking this is such a great heritage of ours throughout this country, and
good.
I don't want to see it diminish. And
nope.
I appreciate you trying to keep all of this going to
well,
your radio program.
We try. All right. Thanks, Alice.
God
appreciate
bless
the
you.
Call. Bye-bye. Thank you. There we go. Ida and then Melody. Good morning, Ida. How are you? Am I saying your name correctly?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
I want you to know I listen to you every Saturday, and I enjoy and I learn a lot, even though I don't fish or hunt, but I raise 3 guys.
Oh, boy.
And husband that.
Oh, yeah.
You know. But what I want to know from you, how does my septic tank affect the bay?
How does you?
I live on 7 acres, and, you know, I have a lot of land where my septic runs on my land. What does it do to the bay?
If you have a self-contained septic system, which a number of rural people do, your septic system is, well, the way a septic system works, let me just explain that to people, is you have two different types of water. You have wastewater, which goes from your toilet into your septic tank, and then you have a gray water system, which is your sink, your dishwasher, your washer, or your washing machine, and things like that. Those are usually two separate systems. The gray water does not flow into the septic tank. Maybe yours does. But anyway, the septic, the sewage that comes from your house goes into your septic tank where it is broken down by bacteria. It then raises, as it raises to a certain level, some of that is leached off by a pipe system out into the ground. It is then absorbed by the ground, and it is evaporated by sunlight. So to answer your question, your septic system does not bother the bay, unless we have a tremendous flood, and if you're, you know, if you're on a waterfront property or something like that, and the runoff water has pulled up any of that sewage out of the soil and taken that into the bay. But that is probably the best system. What I'm talking about are these acres miles and miles and thousands of miles of public sewage systems where you flush the toilet, nothing goes into your yard, it goes down the pipe into the street, it runs down into some treatment facility somewhere, it rains, the treatment facility overflows, you know, or there's a breakdown in the system and it flows into the bay.
But Alan, that is a phony charge on people that live out in the country. I live on a hill.
Look, you guys are an easy target. Farmers are an easy target. You know,
it makes you sick, you know.
Yeah, sure.
The kind of governor we have now, he likes any tax he can put on people, you know.
And I understand.
I'm just sick and tired of it.
Sure. Yep.
But I appreciate all your information that you give.
Anybody with a self-contained self-contained septic system is part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, you can demonstrate all you want, you can write all you want, and they don't listen to diddly. You say.
They listen when you don't vote them back into office.
You have to have a mass of people going to Annapolis and going to Washington, D.C. to demonstrate. That's the only way something is going to change.
And that's what happened on February 6th, I think.
I was so glad, even though I am old and, I don't drive that well to go that far away from home, but that was great, you know. And he was surprised, but he isn't giving up.
No, he's not going to give up.
So,
but they are just in case somebody just tuned in, the Senate President Mike Miller has called for a vote on Senate Bill 281.
Yeah.
This upcoming week, and we urge you to contact your senator in your district. Yeah, call him. Yeah. Call him. Don't. Yeah. Yeah, you can email all you want, but they're gonna just put that.
I don't even have email.
Yeah.
I can't email.
But you can call. That's
okay.
Right.
Okay,
yep.
Well, I want you to know I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And I'm eating breakfast.
Well, I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. What are you having?
What's that?
What are you having?
I have bagels. Bagels, butter, and jelly. I like butter real well. Real butter, not margarine.
I'm with you. Hey. I'm with you, Ida. Thank you.
I see you, Alan.
All righty. Bye-bye. Melody, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Alan. How are you today?
I'm good.
I wanted to ask you about a particular snake that I came across recently.
Okay.
He was about, I'd say about 20, 25 inches long.
Okay.
And he was black onyx, and he had white hollow diamonds going down his back.
White hollow diamonds going down his back.
Yes, incredibly beautiful. I wish I could have caught him.
Hmm. I'll have to think about that. White diamonds going down his back.
People say that we don't have rattlesnakes in Baltimore, but I'll tell you something. More than once, I was going up the path, and there was a snake shaking his rattle at me, so I don't know who he was either.
Could have been a hognose snake.
Oh, okay.
If we have them, the hognose will mimic a rattlesnake like that. Did you hear the rattles, or did you just see him shaking his tail? You heard the rattles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Interesting.
Matter of fact, I threw my backpack at him.
You did?
I wasn't trying to get bit.
No, I don't. I hope not. But
what do you think about the one with the white diamonds?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what it might be. I'll have to look. I'll have to check.
It's incredibly beautiful.
Oh, no doubt.
Beautiful. Black, shiny, great.
Yep. Black and hollow diamonds, huh?
Yep. Maybe one of your callers know.
Yeah, over in the East Baltimore area. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. Who do we have here? Michael and then Ed. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Fine, Alan. Good morning.
Good morning. What's up?
I wanted to chime in on the water quality discussion.
Sure.
First of all, correct what you told the...
Okay, help me out.
Yeah, the lady that called. I didn't catch where her home was, but
yeah.
If it's in Maryland anywhere, the drainage from septic does reach the bay through groundwater.
Ah, through okay. Well, I think I said if, you know, if we have rain or something like that and saturates the soil, but...
Well, no, it all does. I mean,
the effluent
leaches out of the drain fields and
okay.
eventually hits the groundwater and then starts moving towards the bay.
Okay.
And the problem with septic is a conventional septic system does not remove any nitrogen or very little. The system itself does not remove any nitrogen.
Right.
There's a little bit of nitrogen removal through biological processes as the water makes its way to the bay.
Right.
But far more nitrogen is removed from wastewater treatment plants.
Okay.
So a home on a wastewater treatment plant generates less nitrogen, far less nitrogen to the bay than,
right.
than a home on septic. But that wasn't my first point. A couple callers ago, a guy called in saying, you know, the bay's so polluted, we're eventually going to have to
yeah.
throw fish back. And I just wanted to let people know that we are actually making progress. There's been the EPA office, the Chesapeake Bay Program, and the U.S. EPA office estimates, this is all modeling, of course, that nutrient loading from agriculture, which is the biggest source of nutrient loading, is down by roughly 40%. So all the efforts that have been ramped up in the last 15 years, 20 to 15 years, are starting to show some progress. NSGS is doing some groundwater sampling in the Delmarva, on the Delmarva, and they're finding that nitrogen and phosphorus both are starting to decrease in groundwater from where it was a decade ago. One of the problems is it takes a very long time, in some cases as long as 30 years, for the nutrients that leave the field to actually make it to the bay.
Okay.
So we're working on a legacy issue, but we are improving. We are making progress. And there's something going on, unfortunately, locally in Maryland that will diminish some of that progress or slow it down. There's an effort by some of the rural counties to challenge the TMDL process.
What is TMDL?
Total maximum daily load.
Okay.
Which is often referred to as the pollution diet of the bay.
Right.
Set by the EPA. Under the Clean Water Act, the states essentially couldn't get the job done. So EPA said, if you don't hit certain parameters by, I think it was 2010, we're going to take over through this TMDL process. And that essentially breaks down the pollution loading, the nitrogen and phosphorus and sediment that's reaching the bay on a county-by-county level throughout the watershed.
Mm-hmm.
The counties initially thought that was going to cost, and it is going to cost, but the cost estimates were far overblown, and some of the counties, I think, hit the panic switch. And anyway, they've joined forces, some of the rural counties have joined forces with Funk and Bolton, the law firm, to, as they say, challenge the TMDL. So there are efforts underway, unfortunately, to slow down our progress. And anybody that cares about cleaning up the bay, cleaning up their local river, should contact their county commissioners and express their desire to not interfere with the TMDL process.
Which is run by the EPA, is what you're saying, basically.
Yeah, the EPA is the top dog in the TMDL, and then, you know, each state and each county.
So are you saying that we need to turn this whole process over to government regulators, federal government regulators, where we don't have the wherewithal in the state to do that?
Well, the EPA has told the states and the counties to come up with plans on how they're going to meet their pollution reduction targets. So they're not telling us how to do it. They're telling us this is what you, this is the amount that you need to reduce your loading by.
And what's the penalty if the state or county doesn't come up with that plan?
That's a good question. You know.
Well, I mean, there's got to be something.
You would think.
So what are they saying? Do it or what?
That I can't answer. But so far, most of the states and the counties, you know, are taking steps to do it.
And what steps are they? What steps are they taking?
They're upgrading their wastewater treatment plants. They're getting farmers to farm in a more friendly way through nutrient management plans, cover crops, providing money to do it. The one segment of pollution that is continuing to grow is stormwater runoff, and that is the most expensive.
And how can we prevent that?
You can't. I mean, if you develop today, you can do it in a much smarter way and reduce the amount of loading and runoff that leaves the developed property. But to retrofit what we developed, you know, decades ago is very expensive. And that's what the counties are worried about. You know, how are they going to pay for redoing their stormwater system?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, is there a funding mechanism in place yet? I mean, I know we've had this flush tax in Maryland and that type of thing, but is there, you know, are these counties going to be raising taxes on their citizens to improve their infrastructure? Is this going to be something that's supplemented by the federal or state government? How, you know, I can plan to expand my business, but if I don't have the money to do it, how am I going to do it?
Granted, and the flush tax is a good example. And Governor Ehrlich saw the need for it. He created the funding, and as a result of that, large wastewater treatment plants have gotten upgraded, and that's also the source of the funding for the cover crop program. So
right.
it will cost. The payback will be improved productivity of the bay. You know, the bay generates, I think the estimate is something like $64 billion a year
right.
in revenue. So, like anything, it costs to protect it. However, it will generate a return.
Sure.
Not only monetary, but for all of the boating and fishing and crabbing enthusiasts, you know,
right.
you can't put a price tag on the enjoyment of going out and catching a bushel of crabs.
That's true. Michael, I appreciate the call. We have to move along, but you've been very informative. I have to ask, though, are you a business owner or are you a public employee?
I'm actually a business owner and a part-time farmer.
Good. Very good. Appreciate it. And a hunter. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully we'll meet someday.
I got lots of vices.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. There he goes. All right. Ed, we've got to wait. Just a little bit longer. I appreciate the wait right now. I do want to talk to you, Ed, in Sykesville, but it's time. I do have to take a break. We went a little bit long there. I need to tell you folks about Clyde Sports Shop. You know, we're talking a little bit about fishing in the bay. Well, Clyde's has the everything you need to fish for any species of fish in Chesapeake Bay or freshwater. They've got your fishing license. They've got all the rockfish stuff. They've got the line winding machine if you need to get some fresh line. They got actually a fishing hotline telephone if you want to call them. It's 247-FISH, 247-3474. But Clyde Sports Shop is also your hunting headquarters. I want to tell you about the BPS pump shotgun. 12 and 10 gauge turkey shotguns are available. Bottom ejection, DuraTouch armor coating, Mossy Oak Breakup Infinity camo finish, 3 and Vector Plus choke tubes. The comes in Mossy Oak Breakup Infinity, and it's a great gun for turkeys if you'd like to get into that as well. Clyde's is your Browning, full-line Browning headquarters. They carry all the Browning firearms that you could need, one, or imagine, and they're located at 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. Give them a call, 410-242-6108. That's 410-242-6108. Website is www.clydessports.com.
This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands and tools and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex at Glen Burnie now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Unique analysis on local, national, and international developments on the Tom Marr Show, weekdays 9 to noon on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Hey, coming up after the news, we're going to give away, pay attention, we're going to give away one seat to Bass Class, which is sponsored by the Mariner and the Havre de Grace Maritime Museum. That's where it's going to be, Bass Class 2013 on Saturday, March 2nd, coming up real soon. We're going to give a seat away to the seminar program there. It's a $50 ticket. We're giving one away. You'll be the first person to answer a trivia question. And you got to go. I mean, we're not gonna say this is a trivia quiz. This is for a prize. So you know, if you get the prize, we expect you to go. Don't waste a seat for somebody that that could go. And then we're also giving away a Striper School package on February 23rd, and that's also at the Havre de Grace Maritime Museum. Again, a $50 ticket courtesy of Tackle Box Tim Sherman. The Striper School is also sponsored by the Mariner and Havre de Grace Maritime Museum, which is where it is will be held on Saturday, February 23rd, 2013. A lot of great captains are teaching the course. There's Lee Hale, Captain Bob Ritchie, Mark Galasso, Jerry Serson, and Tackle Box Tim will be there teaching Striper School. And then Bass Class is going to be taught by Captain Dan Kardash, who I fished with, a friend of mine, Randy Yarnow, Walt Ross, who I know, and Brian Amicus and Mike Hall. So we've got five instructors for each of those courses. It's an all-day deal. It runs from 10 to 4 at the Havre de Grace Maritime Museum. Now, I'll give you the phone number if you want to go, but after the news, we're going to ask a trivia question on striped bass. We're going to ask a trivia question on bass fishing. And we'll whoever answers those, please don't call if you're not interested in going. Don't call even if you know the answer. If you're not going to go, we need somebody who's going to fill that seat. So, but if you'd like more information and want to go without going through the trauma of answering a trivia question, the admission is $50. Its class size is limited to 35 anglers, and the number to call is 410-608-5170. That's 410-608-5170 to register, and that's Tackle Box Tim Sherman. So we'll get more into that after the news in the next hour, and we invite you to join us and get ready for that so we can test your bass fishing knowledge and also your striped bass fishing knowledge. So hopefully you'll be able to participate in that, and maybe you'll win a spot to the Bass Class or Striper School coming up here real soon. So, hey, the folks at Bay Linex are at the Pasadena Sport Fishing Show today, along with our friends from Tochterman's. So if you get a chance and you want to get the juices flowing on fishing, head down to the Early Heights Fire Department and say hi to Bobby Hawkins from Bay Linex at Glen Burnie. Say hi to Miss D from Talkerman's and, you know, get your fish on. That's for sure. All right. We'll see you after the news. Now it's time for me to say get out, stay safe.
Stimulating talk.